all sails set, its black flag flying in the breeze, a pirate ship plows through the foaming waters of the Spanish Main. Its captain is the terror of the seas, the black-hearted pirate, Yosemite Sam.
Avast there! Shiver my timbers! I'm the piratin'est pirate that ever pirated!
I'm Yosemite Sam the pirate, a buccaneer that's bold. A sail across the seven seas looking out for gold. When anyone gives me trouble, I make some walk the plank. Then I watch the pretty bubbles come up from where they sank. Yo-ho, 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 ho, yo-ho, yo-ho, yo-ho. I sail the seas wherever I please, wherever the trade winds blow. Yo-ho!
Yes, shiver me timbers and raise the Jolly Roger, and you can watch it happen live at Union Station beginning on Saturday. That's when the National Geographic Real Pirates exhibit opens, and local actors are going to breathe new life into more than 200 artifacts unearthed from a real pirate ship sunk, get this, back in 1717. Here to tell us what it was like to put this exhibit together is Mark Locke. He's Senior Vice President of Arts and Exhibitions International and the man behind the design of the display. Mark, so nice to have you. Welcome to Kansas City.
Good to be with you, Steve. Yeah. Pleasure.
The Ouida is, what, the only pirate shipwreck ever found? Do I have that right?
Isn't that odd?
I thought there were, like, lots of them.
Well, we think of that, I think, when we think of Spanish galleons going down and the treasure or the pieces of eight and all the valuable things that were aboard those ships.
But this is a pirate ship.
This is a true pirate ship. It's an amazing story. Barry Clifford, who grew up on Cape Cod, always heard this story from his Uncle Bill. This is the way Barry tells it to me about this pirate ship that sunk right off the coast of Cape Cod, right where Barry lived. Well, you hear those stories as a kid.
And you want to find it.
You've got to find it, right? But most of us probably grow out of that and find other ways to make a living. Well, Barry never forgot. And he just turned his life into this passionate pursuit of finding the Ouida. And the way Barry tells it, I don't want to speak for him, but it wasn't an easy thing. Not only the effort of finding this ship in an area called the Graveyard, where there were hundreds of shipwrecks, one on top of the other, but also a little the humiliation of the very small community that is Cape Cod. Well, there's Crazy Barry looking for his pirate ship.
Well, so how did he find it, and when did he find it?
Well, he did a lot of research first. He didn't completely depend on Uncle Bill's story as being fact. He went to some of the archives in Massachusetts, and indeed, not only did the ship exist, but after it sank right off the coast of Cape Cod, there were two survivors from the Ouida that night that when it sank, and we can talk about that a little later, but they went on trial for being pirates, so they survived the sinking. So there's this complete documentation of the ship even being seen from the coast because the water was so shallow that night. A big storm, it pounded it over and over again, finally broke apart. Well, he knew it was there. He went to some of the documentation that identified where it was and searched and searched and searched, finally brought up a cannon, brought up some pieces of eight, thought he found it. But the real moment of joy for Barry is when they found the ship's bell, and it said the Ouida, and he knew he found this pirate ship.
And that bell is very much on display in this exhibit at Union Station, right?
That's right, in a very dramatic place. We have an opening film that kind of gets everybody up to speed.
I was just going to bring that up. Tell us a little bit about that opening moment, because you really do usher in the bell in a very dramatic way.
Well, all of our exhibitions, and this one especially, lends itself to being theatrical and dramatic with at the same time being academically sound and real. This isn't Hollywood, this exhibition, but it is fun. It's an adventure. It's an adventure. So when the opening film ends, we take you right up to the brink of what happened that night in the film. We don't tell you about the sinking and the aftermath, but it was this bell that rang out in desperate alarm. And then the curtain goes up, the screen goes up, and there's the bell.
Wow. This ship was how far underwater?
Not far at all, 30 feet. That's what's amazing.
30 feet.
Yeah. For me, I
could almost like hop off a rowboat and dive down and
exactly. Exactly. Now, over time, remember 300 years ago, the sand, the silt, it now is 30 feet to the bottom and then maybe sometimes another 30 feet past the, under the sand. So he has to take his ship out, his vessel out there and blow the sand away and look for these pieces.
What kind of technology did he use to sort of really track it down and pinpoint it?
I think it's a combination of advanced technology, some GPS and these big blowers that reveal what's below the sand, but also a lot of elbow grease and hard work. I mean, when you meet his crew, These guys are very passionate about what they do. This still, it was found in 1984, and Nat Geo did a number of magazine articles, did a number of television specials, and Barry to this day, in fact, he's
I was going to say, he's still working on the ship and unearthing it,
He's doing it as we speak. I don't think he's out on the water today, but he lives at Cape Cod, and the vessel is docked right there, and around the tip he goes. And if you stand on the shore, you can see Barry and his team finding more pirate treasure.
What kind of money, what kind of value is attached to the widow here?
I don't know the value, and Barry, I don't think is a, for insurance purposes, there is a value. But what I appreciated about him, it was not about finding it to sell it. And when the state of Massachusetts said, yes, indeed, it's yours to keep, he's only kept it in exhibition. So it only travels around the world in this particular exhibition for all to see.
We are talking millions, aren't we?
You would think there's some value. I mean, one of the great galleries in this exhibition, you know, we hear a pirate treasure, right? And you come around the corner and there's a treasure chest. Now, that's a prop, but what's inside
is the real
spilling
stuff.
Out are all these gold coins, silver coins.
Are they like really gold looking?
Well, mainly silver. And what else is interesting is because, you know, I mentioned this was a slave ship first. Well, it sailed from the coast of England to Africa, to the city of Whydah, the township of Whydah, then off to the economic hub, really, of the world, the Caribbean. And that's because of the slave trade. Well, without slave trade, there is no piracy. Because without slave trade, there is no all this money being exchanged.
Wow.
And because of that, you've got coins, currency from all over the world like no other collection. Because everybody's coming from that spot to that spot. And that's why all these different coins.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I want to know, Mark, about a man named Samuel Bellaby, or better known as Black Sam, who was the captain of the Whydah. He was known both as a kindly man, which, again, runs counter to stereotypes, and a very rich man, too. In fact, he was the wealthiest pirate in recorded history.
That's something.
Just how rich was he?
Well, I guess I'll just say rich.
Yeah, sounds like
and he was a pirate, after all. But I think it's interesting, the folks that became pirates, they were motivated by different things, I'm sure. A bit of folklore and legend here on this story, but it was said that Sam had a girlfriend named Maria Hallett. He came from England to Massachusetts, and Maria's parents were not going to allow their daughter to marry a penniless sailor.
Mm-hmm.
So he went off to that area where the galleons were to salvage. He thought, I'm a sailor. I can salvage some of these wrecks. Well, those were protected or they were all gone. So he went further south, and as the video says, pick the easiest way, the quickest way, and that was piracy.
And piracy means what exactly? What was he doing?
Well, he was a bad guy. I mean, he was a thief.
He would stop a ship, board it, take all its stuff, right?
Take things that didn't belong to him. Now, in the case of the Whydah, remember, he was already heading north.
Mm-hmm.
And because he saw this brand new ship, the Whydah was on its maiden voyage. It was new, it was fast, it was maneuverable, it was the perfect pirate ship. So as he pursued the ship for 3 days, he and his band of pirates, he didn't want to damage the ship. So they weren't firing cannonballs into the sails or into the hull. They were firing them in front and saying, we've got you. You need to surrender. So finally, a Captain Prince from England, who was the captain of this slave ship, surrendered, gave up. And you would think he'd have them walk the plank or hang the crew. He gave the crew the opportunity to become a pirate or to sail back safely in his old ship. So he's kind of a nice pirate, you know, considering, as you said, the stereotypes.
You know, what do you make? You have lots of actors and actresses who are involved in this. Tell us what the intersection is there.
Well, I have to give credit to Union Station. We've been so privileged to do other exhibitions there. We did Princess Diana the Titanic exhibit, America I Am, we did with Tavis Smiley right there at Union Station. And the energy and the commitment to doing it right. I mean, if you drive by Union Station today, you'll see the banners and the pirates rappelling down the front of the building, a pirate ship on the corner. Those are all things Union Station did, including brought the actors as part of this exhibition. And it just makes it that much more interactive, that much more fun.
How, speaking of actors, does Hollywood portray pirates accurately?
Well, and not, I don't want to portray myself as a historian, but as I've now kind of listened to the experts,
yeah.
Exactly, there is something true, I think, about that kind of maverick attitude, that expression of freedom. You know, one of the things that I've learned about these pirate ships that were out there, there weren't many places for people to experience real freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like little floating democracies out there in the ocean. And whether you were an African, some former slaves in the U.S., women, you were valued for what you could do, not for who you were or what social strata you came from.
Yeah.
So in a way, there was something that we admire, that we romanticize, I think, about pirates being out there. And they, you know, this we always see the dress being, you know, there was nothing about a pirate that wanted to wear a uniform that looked like, why, when I can express my own self? So there were a lot of fashion statements going out there. So Hollywood captures it in some way. But I think when you see these real objects, real pieces of history, that's when you understand the real story.
Well, our staff has put together a little mashup of movie clips and how Hollywood portrays pirates. Let's listen.
Now clear up them there shambles, or I'll feed you piecemeal to the rats in the cellar.
What would the world be like without
Captain Oak?
Oh, better far to live and die under the brave black flag I fly than play a sanctimonious part with a pirate head and a pirate heart.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.
The Dread Pirate Roberts never takes prisoners.
I can't afford to make exceptions. I mean, once word leaks out that a pirate has gone soft, people begin to disobey you, and then it's nothing but work, work, work all the time.
That's Robert Newton, Dustin Hoffman, The Pirates of Penzance, The Pirates of the Caribbean, and The Princess Bride. Yeah, I'm wondering, do all pirates wear eye patches? They don't, right?
I don't know. I certainly... I think if you're just missing an eye, probably is that. But it makes you a little intimidating, doesn't it? So probably there were a few that just use it for theatrical purposes.
Yeah.
But by the way, as I look around the studio, I think you did enjoy putting that together because your staff seemed to be quite into remembering and being a pirate. So
yeah.
That's great.
So this exhibit appeals, what, to folks of all ages here we're talking about, right?
It really does. I think if you talk to any 8-year-old or 6-year-old, you know, they want to be a pirate, both boy and girl.
Yeah.
So there's that fun. I don't want to. Because we call it real pirates, I don't want to categorize it as something that is adult, if you will. This we make it fun because there's a lot about piracy and that part of the world and the things that were going on and how they dressed and how they acted that is fun. There's an adventure to be had at this exhibit, but it's also real.
Yeah. There's something counterintuitive here, this notion that we're celebrating thieves.
Well, and that's a fine line because we're not celebrating, but yes, here we are, right?
Yeah.
We just listen to that. Hollywood does that. We're joking about eye patches, but the true story of them being living outside the law, if you will, is told in the exhibition.
And the exhibition runs through when?
Through January 5th.
Okay.
Opens tomorrow. And we're very excited. You know, as a designer, when you look at a space, the temporary exhibit space that Union Station provides is perfect for this exhibition. So I'm very happy how it laid out.
More information, all those dates are on our website, kcur.org. Mark Locke, again, Senior Vice President of Arts and Exhibitions International and the man behind the design of the display this weekend. So good to see you, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be with you, Steve.